something to do with practice, though. So you might just want to put that in right away. Practice. You know, it was interesting, but years ago, I remember in the events that I played in the sport of hockey all my life, I remember my dad actually made a net for me so that I could practice my shooting and my shots. So he actually made a net out of pretty heavy tube steel and just regular screening. And so I would go out once in a while. I look back and I said, I wish I would have done it more. And in fact, I still have the old thing that I put together with strengthening the wrists. And my wife had asked me, she goes, is there anything I can do to strengthen my wrists? And I've got the perfect thing. And so I pulled out this old piece of about maybe 5 pounds of lead with a stick that it's attached to and a rope. And what you do is you put your hands out and you roll it up. And then you roll it down. And my kids and I used to have challenges between who could do the most. I think the most I may have got to was 7. And your arms will just really burn. And you end up really strengthening your muscles. And therefore, what that's supposed to do when you're playing the sport of hockey, it's supposed to make that shot. If you've ever watched the professionals play, you'll see how fast that puck will travel when they just flick their wrist. It goes so fast, it's virtually very difficult to even spot it and see it. But it just comes through practice. In fact, you've got that big goalie in front of the net, don't you? If you've ever seen that, you wonder, how did they get that thing to go by that goalie? Because you've only got these little spots. And so, in fact, sometimes a lot of us used to put in front of that net, we used to put up a big board, and you'd only cut out very small holes in it. And then as your shot got better, you used to practice to get it into these little 4x4 sections. Football players have done that. I remember one of the stories with old Johnny Unitas, for those that remember him, that he used to take a tire and put it on a rope and then attach it to the limb of an oak tree, and then he'd swing it. And then he practiced throwing the football right through that tire. So it was practice. And when you see all the things that are done for us to become better, it always involves practice, doesn't it? So I've got a very big concept that I actually have only 1 hour to cover and go from the broad concept to narrowing it down to what we can do to practice on this concept. I'd like to start by going, though, to the Gospel of John in chapter 1. One of the exciting things about learning about God's truth, for those of you maybe that originally were familiar with the Bible but started learning about it, you would open up your books and your Bibles and you would come to Genesis 1 and you thought that was the beginning. And then later on you found out, well, look at John chapter 1 verse 1. That really is the beginning of the beginnings in a sense of what God has given us to know here. But here it says in verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. The Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made through him, and without him nothing was made that was made. There are other scriptures that talk about that. I believe one in Ephesians. He created all things. Because once I got a question of, well, did Satan make evil beasts and all that kind of thing? I said, God never gave him creative capability. We see the scripture, it says here, and without him nothing was made that was made. That's good enough. So God has made, through Jesus Christ, he's made everything. In him was life, the life was the light of men, and the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. And it goes on and talks about John the Baptist, and then on again to Jesus Christ, and here it says in verse 12, verse 11, his own did not receive him. As many as received him, to him he gave the right to become the children of God, even to those who believe in his name. Here's another huge concept here that's revealed to us. And so we get pieces of this, and the question is, why did he do all this? Why did we don't know a time elapsed here, by the way, between Satan's rebellion and when God started his plan out. It just reveals these concepts here. Then it goes back. You can go back to Genesis, and it talks about what he designed to do. Why? It's mind-boggling sometimes as we sing the hymns, as we consider his plan, even as we just came out of the days of unleavened bread. I still like to think about it in light of what was Christ doing at the time just under 2,000 years ago. You know, he still now had a purpose and a work to do, and this has got to do with us now. We're a part of that work. Why? Why us? Why me? Why this entire world? Why go through this entire mess that we're going through right now? It's incredible. Did he know how bad it would get? Evidently, with all that we read about what Christ had to do, why did he do this? What was his concept? Why us? Why did he die for us? Why did they deliberate on that these things were going to be done? It's summed up really in one word, isn't it? We can easily answer that word, why? Why did he do this? In one word, we can sum. It's the entire concept, which you can't even. There's no way you can get an hour through on this. But I'm going to try to sum it up and then focus it, narrow it down, even as it pertains to something like Mother's Day. What's the whole point here? It's the word summed up in love. That's what it is. And yet, love has been such a cremated concept today. It's hard for those to grab onto. Even you, really? That's love? And yet, when you see what God is and who he is and why he did it, when you sing these songs and when it takes practice to truly understand what God's love is. If the carnal mind is enmity against God, as Paul said, then it takes putting on the mind of Jesus Christ and practicing his kind of love. It doesn't come natural at all for the natural human being, does it? And so love has been entirely perverted. Then you get a spiritual aspect of Satan coming into the scene and just perverts the entire concept, which we can see revealed on what people say love is. Do we see how it's described? Do we see how it's manifested in the world today? It's simply incredible when we see it. And then we can get pulled into that trap, whether it's by words, whether it's by music, whether it's by TV programs, or by Mother's Day. Oh yeah, it's Mom's Day here. Gotta send her a card. Gotta send her a card? Gotta send her a card? Really? If you have to send your mother a card, then there is no love. Very interesting as we think about the concept. And it is it just on, is it on Mother's Day? Is it just on Mother's Day? So interesting as I've thought the process through, my physical mom is gone. But yet I can still honor her. Isn't that interesting? Don't forget God is the God of the living too. I'll see her again. How can I honor her? By doing the things that she taught me that are godly and relevant today. So I can still have honor and love toward my mom. So this is practice. And the practice has got to do with an entire way of thinking. Let's go back to Deuteronomy chapter 30. In Deuteronomy 30, this is the concept that God tried to share with the Israelites from the very beginning. Of course, they were the stubborn, stiff neck, but the concept was still there. He was still trying to teach them by things that he did on reflecting what his love is. I mean, if anybody would have said, you know, why me? Why do this for me? It should have been the Israelites. Why, after all the stubborn, stiff-necked things that they did, did God choose to still show them his love, intervene for them, deliver them on so many occasions until they all just full-right rejected him, which most of the world, again, does today, which is no surprise. But my point is here is we live in a world that is anti-love. When you think about it, this world does not have the love of God at all. And so for us to take, it actually takes practice on understanding God's love and practicing God's love. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your descendants may live. Obviously, just by this verse, it shows he gives us the freedom and capability to choose. Verse 20, though, it says, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey his voice, that you may cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. So here he wanted Israel to express his love, their love through, and in fact, not just an expression by things that they said, but he was referring to here. He's saying cling. Cling. We see these words cling and cleave in different verses in Joshua chapter 22. Here, let's look over here in Joshua 22. And then we'll go to a little bit of an opposite one, what became a problem, because the practicing went a different way. Joshua 22, verse 5, here it says, "Take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments, and to cleave to him, and to serve him with all your heart, with all your soul." This verse pretty much sums up the entirety of the sermon today, really. I mean, look how much is said in here. If you just looked at the first part when it says, "Take diligent heed to do the commandment and the law," and somebody asks you why, because that is the expression of our love toward God. When God is love, the entirety of what he did from the very beginning on even creating us and making the creation was a vast expression of his love. It's what he is. It's what he does. But we've got to practice. Now in 1 Kings chapter 11, 1 Kings chapter 11, in verse 2, 1 Kings 11, verse 2, "Of the nations concerning which the Lord said to the children of Israel, you shall not go into them, neither shall they come into you, for they will surely turn away your heart after their gods." Solomon clave to these in love. What did God say to Solomon? He said, don't do this. And so the question is, with the wisest man who ever lived, how can we think that he didn't get away with it, but we could? Because if you start to mix in with what the rest of this world represents and what we watch, what we listen to, and Satan's entire distortion of what takes place in this world, how can we not be affected by this unless we diligently turn and practice the other? Okay, let's go to Matthew chapter 5 now and see what Jesus Christ has said. Because we understand that the concept of love might be easy to say, but we find it many times difficult to do. But the point is, God has set us apart from this world to be different, to act different, to think different. So here in Matthew 5, verse 43, he says, "You've heard it's been said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy." And God never said that. That was an addition of others that had come along. Verse 44, "But I say to you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you. Do good to those that hate you. And pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you." Well, in the past 10 to 20 years, haven't we had the opportunity to have practice with this? I would say so. You know, life can go along pretty smooth, can it? But interject a couple conflicts here and there within families, within the churches, now you've got the opportunity to practice. How am I supposed to look at this the way that God looks at it? Because, really? Bless those who curse you. It's an entire different mentality. It's like that someone, if I were to bring that hockey net up to you and put that board in front of it with the small squares at each corner and then said to you, go ahead and fire away. I don't know if someone would even know how to hold a stick. It takes a lot of practice, but I've watched the guys that squeak these goals, and I'm going, wow, I look back at that and I say, I wish I would have practiced more. I look back, I wish I would have practiced a lot more. I had it, I didn't practice enough. It was mediocre, okay, but these guys fire away and I can't even see it. Practice. And it's the same thing when we're talking about this element too. Here's the point when we come to Matthew chapter 6, verse 24. This is where we reflect again on our commitment and how we've got to distance ourselves from the way that this world operates, the way that the world teaches, identify it, and then practice the other. Matthew 6, verse 24, Christ said, "No man can serve two masters, for either he'll hate the one and love the other, or he'll hold to the one and despise the other. You can't serve both." So we've got to learn where the difference is, where the divide is. Matthew 24, verse 12, it talks about what's going to happen in the end time. And many of us have been witnesses of this taking place. Matthew 24, verse 12, "Because iniquity will abound, the love of many will wax cold." We're in a society now where it is every man for himself. You don't see that the days where you'd get the sacrifices, one would sacrifice his life for his neighbor or his brother. Everybody will be protecting their own skin. And so Christ repeats it again here from what he said all the way back to the Israelites of old in Mark chapter 12, verse 30. Mark 12, verse 30. Here he says, "You will love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength." This is the first commandment. Notice how he embellishes this and enhances it. And this was something that was said nearly 4,000 years before. Same thing, same concept, which we look back and have all the testimonies of the Israelites that didn't get the concept. We're in an entire different age right now, because God has given us the ability to understand this. And yet for us, it still takes practice to get to the kind of love that God is speaking about, to get to being of who He is. Because this is what we're expected to be too. If God is love, and we've got to be yet love His Holy Spirit, then that should be something. It's one of the fruits of the Spirit. But ultimately, it's to become who we are too. And you don't just get there with no practice. It happens through a lifetime of experience. Again, going back to the ones that have been married for quite a long time here. It says, as my grandmother said, "You don't understand what love is until you've been married for 50 years. Why? Because you've had 50 years of practice. And it's still not done at 50 years. Still not over. But it's an entirely wonderful concept to look at those that have practiced for so long and that have never given up. He says, the second like this is, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There's no other commandment greater than these. And to love him, look what he says, with all your heart, with all the understanding, with all the soul, with all the strength. This is the cleaving and clinging. This is the, folks, this is serious. And to love his neighbor as himself is more than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices. People think they could get away with doing, send a card. Just send them a card. Sorry about that. It's more than a card. See what this world practices? Send a card. I'm busy. Send a card. It's a lot more than just that. So we're in the Bible. Where you go beside? I've taken places, but if you're going to go to certain scriptures, where would you go? In your mind, where would you go to find out about love? Couple places. One was 1 Corinthians chapter 13. We know that to be the love chapter. And another one, by the way, if you remember 1 Corinthians, you'll remember Romans 13. Very short concept. Do you remember what that says? Love is. It's what it's the definition. Faith is in Hebrews. Love is in Romans. Love, it's very simple. Love is the fulfilling of the law. It's actually doing something that I'll actually quote a little song. It's interesting how the song was written. Country Western artist, but beautiful song reflecting out what love truly is. So let's go to 1 Corinthians 13. Not going to spend a whole lot of time here because I'd like to spend a little bit of time on practicing today. On practicing. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 4, here it says, love suffers long and is kind. So more reflections that we have to do on ourselves. Are we kind? Are we forbearing and forgiving? Love doesn't envy. It doesn't parade itself. It's not vain or arrogant. Look at that compared to society today. The arrogance that's out there. I mean, some don't even understand it, how arrogant and defiant that they're being against God. It doesn't behave rudely. Wow. How much rudeness do we see out there today? It does not seek its own. See, isn't this the antithesis of what we're looking at in society? It doesn't seek its own. It's not provoked. It thinks or keeps no account of evil. It doesn't rejoice in iniquity, but it rejoices in the truth. It bears all things. It believes all things. When it says believes all things with hope, not in a false way, not in an ignorant way, that you're just all, I'll sell you a bill of goods. But it thinks very positive. It hopes for all things. It endures all things. And it never fails. It never ceases, because that's what God is, and He never ceases. It's eternal. Now, the ultimate expression of love, you'll find where? In John 3, verse 16. For God so loved the world, because we understand, in essence, that sacrifice implies to the entirety of the world that will be giving an opportunity at the end of this time that we're going through, at the end of what's pictured at His holy days, when the second resurrection and all this fallacy and falseness, people will have to undo, just as we've practiced, by the way. Do you know the millennial will be here for 1,000 years? Did you ever think about that? Why 1,000 years?
Because it's a millennium.
Man, and what else? What did I say from the beginning? Remember? Practice. Just like we've been given the opportunity to practice, there's going to have to be a time for other people to have their practice too. And maybe for us to practice teaching as we've been given the truth too. It's going to open up a whole interesting scenario, isn't it? So that everyone could come to the opportunity to have eternal life. John 15, verse 13, remember this as we've dealt with this during the Passover and Days of Unleavened Bread. Christ said, greater love has no one than this, than to lay down his life for his friends. That's about as unselfish as you can get, which is pictured by exactly what he did. See, Christ said a lot of things, didn't he? There's a lot of things he said, but there's a lot of things he did to reflect on his love. He was forbearing, wasn't he, with his disciples? Very kind, very giving. In fact, to the society around him. We see one time where he threw the tables and money changers out. Kind of perplexed people at first because he said that's not really what he did all the time. We know it wasn't wrong or sinful. And that there's a time for anger to be kindled. Sometimes God's people don't get angry enough at the right things, at sin, to say it stops. That's why it says hate it, abhor evil. And we've got to get to the time when it's just like, I've practiced that enough. I'm tired of that. I'm tired of what it brings. That's it. It stops. So the ultimate expression, again, he quotes in John 15, verse 13. And John 14, verse 15, he goes, really, you love me? If you love me, you're not going to just be sending me a card and saying, I love you. It says, keep what I say to do. Keep my commandments. He said in verse 21 of John 14, "He who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him, and I'll reveal myself to him." So how can we make these statements tangible in our lives today, especially within our marriages and within our families, because isn't that where it starts? How can we have a relationship with other people if it can't even start in our own family? People have problems within their own families. People have problems between their own spouses. Remember what Christ told them before you bring an offering, as we sang the song today, "Forgiven, you shall be forgiven." You got a problem with against your brother, don't come to God and say you love him if you haven't fulfilled the law that says you better work it out with your brother first, then bring your offering to be accepted. Don't say I love you when you're not fixing a problem. "Oh, but it's difficult. It's hard for me to do that." Yes, it is. But the more that you practice, the better it gets. Remember a very difficult situation to where I found out something about my brother, and I just said, "Well, wow, you know, that's too bad for them." Then it just hit me like a shockwave. If I love my brother, I've got to confront them and say something about this. But I really didn't want to. I could have said, "Well, it's really not my business." But if I love my brother, it was. It was something that was being done in sin. And I couldn't just blow it off and give it to someone else. What a rocker that was, a shaker. I'm just going, I have to do something. Or the Bible designates and within God's law, you don't do anything about that. You take that sin on yourself. You better do something about it. You better talk. And so I knew it was difficult. I just got down on my knees and prayed about it. I said, "God, please help me with this. Give me the words to say. Help it to be received in the way that's intended. And so follow through with this." And thankfully, it was received well. And I believe and hope that it changed what the person was doing. So it's practice, isn't it? We've had practice in the Church of God, some for many years, but it's not over yet. So what does love look like, and how is it manifested in your marriage and even within your family? What should it look like? In 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, 1 Peter 2, verse 9, this is, once again, it talks about a virtue because this is really our utmost responsibility. What kind of characters and individuals do people perceive in us, especially how we interact within our families? You know, there are different ways, again, which we can, you know, specify on how to treat one another. 1 Peter 2, verse 9, "You're a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim, exhibit, exemplify, or manifest the praises, the virtues of him who's called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, like a song in the night." Right? As we sing those, wow. When we sing those, it brings up, we're practicing and reflecting on even what we sing. God put within mankind the capacity to receive and to feel love, and equally important, the capacity to give and to communicate love. God is love, and he commands us to love. 1 John chapter 4, verse 7. Before we get into the specifics here. 1 John 4, verse 7. Here John said here, "Beloved, let us love each other." See, once again, it's always an easy concept to say. And because it's been polluted so much, some people will just blow that off without any deeper meaning into it. He says, "For love is of God, the one that existed from the very beginning, that we could show forth his praises. And everyone who loves is begotten of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love." So let's consider these two aspects which we talked about, the capacity to receive and feel. Some, sad to say, have been maybe so hurt in their lives that they don't know how to even receive. And that turns into selfishness too, because if there's no one to receive it, then how can anyone give it? Works both ways. Let's consider two aspects. One is the action, the giving, and the communication aspect. Due to the selfish nature inherent in mankind, there are those who actually struggle with this aspect of love. So the action. One is the action, the giving and the communication. The second is the feeling. Maybe you could put the warm fuzzies as we try to identify it. Isn't it great to feel loved? Some may have not have felt that in their lives because of different circumstances within family. There have been people, though, for instance, those that maybe their mother left them in a trash bin, and they were eventually picked up by someone and maybe given to a family that raised them and loved them. So it would be hurtful, no doubt, to see what they went through, but they were still loved by a family. So that's happened. Others have been rejected for different reasons, abusive relationships, maybe because the father or mother were alcoholics, and maybe that happened before them, so they never really understood that concept. So it's harder for them sometimes in the practice element, but it's still capable for sure. God never said that it's impossible. So there's the feeling, the receiving, or the understanding aspect as opposed to the giving and the communication. There are those that actually have problems with this aspect because they've given all of their lives. That's all they've done is give. And they're too prideful to receive. See, love goes both ways. See, we give our offerings to God, don't we? And He receives them. See, both aspects are necessary for the intent of love. The problem is the aspect of communication in love, both in giving and receiving. So let me say to you, mes amis, je m'appelle Maurice, je parle un peu de français. Comment t'appelles-tu? Anybody out there? No, I don't. I'm sorry, I'm looking at somebody that knows that, and I probably just totally mispronounced the 4 years of French, and I know a little bit, but anyway, thankfully for God's mercy there. Okay, how about this? I'll try to look and see, okay, who doesn't know what here? I know aspects of some different languages, a little bit of Spanish. How about this one? I think I have you on this one. Wo shui shi han yu zai bei da? Bei jing da shui? Jing he cha? Jing he cha? I practiced that when we go from city to city, as I got to go along the railroad tracks and we come into the station, there'd be some Chinese people. And I'd look at this one. I go, Ching He Cha, Ching He Cha. And they just burst out laughing. It means, would you like some tea? So here's the first thing that you say to someone. They go, would you like some tea? And they just start cracking up going, this is a foreigner that's just starting to practice here. Ching He Cha. You know, just as speaking in these foreign languages makes absolutely no connection whatever, they start laughing. What do you mean by that? Communicating in a foreign emotional language may also have the same result. I found that out the hard way. And that's why God gives us families and spouses and children. Practice. Now, you could throw it all away and give up and go, I'll just never understand the language, or you can try to figure out what the language is. I find that to be extremely helpful in understanding what that language is. We may speak our primary emotional language, but it often comes across to other people as an unknown tongue. We may say, I love you in one language, while emotionally others receive it in a total different way. Well, don't you understand I love you? I told you that right from the very start. The husband will say, I told you I loved you, and you said I do, by the way. I just didn't think I'd have to say it all the time. So as a result, our efforts to demonstrate our love are frustrated. The husband will go, what do you think? I go out there and work. Oh, sorry, but the woman stays home and watches soap operas all day, evidently. I don't think so. That's not in the mothers that I've watched all my life. In fact, I've seen my mother probably hurt her knees because the washer and dryer were downstairs. Up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down for years and doing that. And preparing meals. I still remember times and looking back to where, wow, it was this small table that we sat at, the kitchen and the table were right there. How we even made it through that? You don't even think of it. You had a table to sit at. And Mom would always get up. Something needed to be, she got up. I remember the chair, because the chair gave access to the stove and to the cupboards, and that's where she sat. Years later, I just said, that's not happening anymore. Well, I'll get up and get this. I go, no, you're not. You've done your service. Now it's time for someone else to serve you. Very interesting how a mother will look at her service to the family. And the dad, too. I had a dad that he did the grass, mowed the lawn, serviced the cars. Everything was always gassed up and ready for my mom when she went to church. So I saw that. But, all, you know, if it's just that, there can really be something missing. If it's just that, well, don't you know? Don't you know that I love you? Not if it's not her language. Not if it's not her language. So there are something called basic languages of love, and I'm going to get into another aspect, hopefully soon, with the personalities that Jesus Christ had to work with. When he chose all of his different disciples, they were all different, and all had different receiving ends and giving ends. So we're going to test this today. We've done this years ago, but I thought I'd like to do this again. If I could have Lane, would you pass these out? I have got to try to save paper. I'd like one per two. So when you get it, if you fold it in half, crease it, fold it and crease it again, and tear it in half, and share it. Everybody gets one, but I just don't want. There'll be a half a page for everybody. Okay, we'll take a look at this. Now, if you want to look further into this, I'll just say that it was an eye-opener for me because it relates to how Jesus Christ worked with his disciples and how he shows his love toward us. All these things, these elements that are pointed out, you'll find in Scripture. You'll find them manifested in Scripture. And you'll see maybe how they've been reflected in your life, too. So if there's any left over, I'll gather those afterward. But don't take a look at that yet until we cover them a little bit more. Okay, but we've got five elements here, and maybe you'll find another one. Let's see, this is relegated to just five. But if we're going to practice, this is a great way to start out. Thank you. This is a great, great way to start out. You know, the first one, speaking of words of affirmation, you'll find this in a book called The Five Love Languages. There are five biblical ways or aspects of expressing love to our mate and to our children and to others, by the way. First one, and some of you, I just like to, as I'm going through these, find out, even without going through the test, you might find out which one identifies you. But the different thing is you'll find out there is one that you might relate to on the giving end, and a different one that you might get on the receiving end. And I'll explain to you a little bit more about this in a minute. The first one is you get words of affirmation. What would you also call that? Giving someone a compliment, an attaboy. We call them attaboys, words of expression in that way. Actions don't always speak louder than words. If this is your love language, then unsolicited compliments mean the world to you. Hearing the words, I love you, are important. Hearing the reasons behind that love will send your spirit soaring. And insults can leave you shattered and not easily forgotten if someone makes a negative comment. I had mentioned a little bit about the disciples and what they went through, that John was one of those that seemed to exhibit that quality of love that Christ was talking about, wrote the gospel, wrote the three epistles speaking of love. It would seem that he would have taken that very hard if what Christ said to Peter would have been given to John. That you know, understand and see the way that Peter was for John to even meant, you know, to Christ to even say to John, "Get behind me, Satan," might have devastated him. But nor would John probably do what Peter had done either. But the point is, as everyone receives this in different ways, you may be actually a good giver in words of affirmation, maybe because of the way that you were raised or grew up. Sometimes we make a look at this and we go, you know, I really don't do that enough. Once again, I remember growing up, after every meal, I still remember that my grandfather would give my grandmother three kisses on the cheek. He'd get up, thank her, give her three kisses, and then leave the kitchen, and she'd be left to clean the dishes up most of the time. And us too, we would learn that. But, you know, maybe you've seen examples of words of affirmation. Maybe those have, maybe on the job, someone has said, "Thank you so much," and they're sincere about it. Just really raises your spirits. It's really nice to receive those sometimes, especially if you're a receiver of that. Now, I would think, in looking at these, there's probably no one that says, "Well, that doesn't really help me at all." I couldn't probably imagine that. But for someone, if you identify this in a child or in a mate, you're going to soar your love and fill a tank if you understand that, and if you can convey it in a way that's sincere, not that you're just saying it to say it, because people can identify that too. They can identify the phoniness of just saying something. That's sometimes what's difficult about cards. You know, just send a card. Well, what's behind that? And maybe God can see that in an offering that's been given too. You know, do we really tell God, "I love you so much," and it's going to be reflected in our actions? So you've got words of affirmation. You get quality time. Quality time, in the vernacular of quality time, nothing says, "I love you," like full undivided attention. Being there for this type of person is critical, but really being there with the TV off, the fork and the knife down, all the chores and tasks on standby, make sure significant other feel specially loved. Distractions, postponed dates, or the failures to listen can be hurtful. Anyone go through this before? I got my hand up. Something that I didn't totally understand, and I'm grateful to understand it. See, because when you, maybe again looking at this really quick, maybe you already know what yours is. I know what my giving is. Maybe I got this from my dad. I'm not totally sure. But see, remember when I told you that when Mom had to go to church, the car was completely cleaned, vacuumed, washed, and filled up. What does that tell you about him? And looking down through words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, physical touch. Acts of service. That's how he expressed his love. If the woman is not acts of service receiving, it's not that she doesn't appreciate it. But you're not going to be able to do that and get away with it. And talk about the dawning when I found out this. Wow. When I found out that my wife wasn't a receiving gifts person, I'm going to save a lot of bucks here. And not, by the way, not that you do away with that because her top is not receiving of gifts. You got to plug those in there. But if you recognize if it's quality time, and you know what? That was my hardest one to give. Figures. Because I'm too busy. I've got phone calls. I've got emails to answer. I've got stuff to do. Don't you realize it's a mess around here? Or when you have a mother that lives with you, And Bob needed to have things done once in a while. So here's old acts of service, Eric, going down and showing my love to Mom, coming up, and maybe giving an attaboy to my wife. What's that going to do? All of a sudden, you may get some competition here going, wait a second. You love her more than you do me. Not that that happened, but saying this is the thoughts that can come. You're doing all this, and my tank's not being filled up. But see, with the knowledge of this, if you understand what somebody is on the receiving end, wow, can it go a long way? With the kids, or with the grandkids, or even with the boss, by the way. What do they like? How about a gift basket? I got something for my daughter one time, just a little trinket that said Jacqueline on it, I think. She's a receiving gifts. And that can go a long way. Now, I'm not necessarily a receiving gifts, but if someone gave me like a brand new BMW, my love tank would be really filled. But all this can be different. And you know something? It can be a lot of fun. It can be very enjoyable, especially if you identify it. And especially if you've got to fight a little battle because of what you see is needed and what you're able to give is a little bit different, isn't it? Because now it requires what? Practice. And the more that you'll practice, the better that you'll get with it. And the more the relationships will grow and solidify and develop. So let's look at the receiving of gifts. You know, don't mistake this love language for materialism, because the receiver of gifts thrives on the love, the thoughtfulness, and the effort behind the gift. That you even took time to send something like that and to think about them can be that aspect. See, if you speak this language, the perfect gift or gesture shows that you are known, you're cared for, you are prized above whatever was sacrificed to bring the gift to you. So a missed anniversary or maybe a hasty, thoughtless gift would not work out so well. You know, so would the absence of everyday gestures in that way. Acts of service. Can vacuuming the floors really be an expression of love? I've had to really, you'll all have yours to deal with. And I love looking at this and sharing because it's practice. We all grow in aspects of love. You know, can it be an expression of love? Yes. Vacuuming the floors can be an expression of love. Anything you do to ease the burden of responsibilities weighing on an acts of service person will speak a huge amount if they are acts of service receiving. The words he or she most wants to hear are, let me do that for you. Let me do that for you. See, laziness or broken commitments and making more work for them tell those with this language that their feelings really don't matter. Ah, they'll get through it. That's very dangerous. And the fifth aspect in physical touch. Now, this language isn't all about sexuality in a bedroom. A person whose primary language is physical touch is not surprisingly very touchy. They'll touch. And you know, there are people that maybe don't like that receiving aspect for whatever reason. And so a person that's physically touch-oriented that wants to give a hug, and you kind of get a vibe that that wasn't received in that way, just because maybe you just kind of went into their airspace without notifying the tower. You know, so maybe there's something to visualize here in understanding that, what a person may want or not want, you know. But and there's different characteristics. The Church of God tends to be huggy. But don't forget, don't criticize one as having a bad attitude if they're not that way. They may receive love in a different way, and for whatever reason, they've grown up or whatever. Or maybe it's something that they have to identify, but to make a judgment on them would not be right. It's just going, I've got to see maybe some attaboys here, some thank yous. Oh, you look really nice today, however that might be. So it's not always that simple. So pats on the back, holding hands, and thoughtful touches on the arm, shoulder, or face can always be ways to show excitement or concern or care and love. Physical presence and accessibility are crucial. Why neglect or abuse can be very destructive too. If there's someone that's one of your kids, God gives us different kids, and they're all different. You could hug on some. Another would maybe not want that closeness like that. You have to find out what it is. But it speaks huge volumes on what you can do in improving relationships. And see, these all start right within the family. So let's look at this really quickly and find out. You rate these yourself, okay? They're 1 to 5 here. You look at this as we go through them, and let's talk about this for a minute. The first one, I feel especially loved when people express how grateful they are for me and for the simple everything that I do. These are words of affirmation. Where would you place that on your 1 to 5 scale? And you might change these later on, by the way. And if you want, I've got a deeper quiz. If you would really like to delve into it, send me an email and I'll attach to it. It's about 30 questions as opposed to 5. If you have a little bit more time identifying, don't forget these are the how you feel loved. And it'd be good to talk to your spouses or your children about this. Because the more that you can grab onto these, the better relationships that you'll have with other people, because your mindset will be in the give element, not in the get element. And you'll be respected and appreciated much more if you identify those. So here we've got words of affirmation. I feel especially loved when people express how grateful they are for me and for the simple everything that I do. Words of affirmation, where would you find that in the Bible? I remember one specific one. Maybe you can think of more than one. Words of affirmation. Voice comes out from heaven. This is my son in whom I am well pleased. Wow. Imagine being on the receiving end of that one and hearing what God had to say. How about this one? Well done, good and faithful servant. How's that going to make you feel when you're presented before the Father? I mean, I don't think the little flurries we talk about are even in comparison to what will flee. The warm fuzzies, this will be make the hair on the back of your neck stand up when our Father tells us, nice job. Because we'll always go into it recognizing it was never us. You know, we had to make the decisions and plod the course. We don't deserve it. We'll already have that figured out and understood. But to hear our Father just say, nice job. You did it and you made it. Now set before you this. You'll find a lot of different examples throughout the Bible within Christ and God the Father using words of affirmation. So they are important. It's good to hear that. It might not be your number one on the receiving end, but yet we can also be aware of people and saying, thank you very much. You know, whether sometimes the sound person, the person setting up the tables, you know, the ones sometimes behind the scene to go, you know, thanks so much. After I found out how difficult sound can be, I usually go up to the guy at the feast and go, you know something? Anybody in their right mind would not be doing this job. Because I'll call it thankless sometimes. Because the sound is the one that's always the one that's, there's always something going on. A cable goes bad, some connection goes bad. Someone here says it's too loud, it's not loud enough. When I went up to the feast, oh, it's too loud. Where are you sitting? She was sitting in the chair right next to the speaker. Yeah, I would say it would probably be too loud. I would make your choice to go some over to another speaker. But sometimes, again, with whatever happens, sometimes even in the smallest ones, you go, thank you so much, you know, for what you've done. Maybe extra service that you've gotten at a department store. You know, just say thank you so much for your help and service. I know I was talking to someone the other day that was helping me with a bill that I was not receiving. And so I was talking with him, and having a son that's done call center, I can understand that a lot more now. So I told him, I go, hey, thank you so much for your help with this. He goes, wow, I don't get this all the time. I go, yeah, I know what you guys get. That's why I'm saying this. They're the ones that get the ones that are just tearing into them all the time. Or what about a waitress? You know, I had a daughter who was a waitress. And sometimes she would give good service and be left with no tip. And so for someone to say, hey, thank you for a nice job, not just giving a tip, but you did a great job, and tell the manager if it was that. She did a great job. Just wanted to let you know she was very personable. All the things came. You know, those words of affirmation. We see these throughout the Bible, by the way. The second one. Let's look at number two. I feel especially loved when a person gives me undivided attention and spends time alone with me. No TV. No cell phones. And, of course, we've seen it. You've watched movies about that. Towards, here's the phone, whether it's the doctor or whatever. Got to take the call. Turn it off. Put it away. Quality time. Takes a sacrifice. Well, what if somebody, the world's going to go on, but your relationship won't. We've got to value what's most important. So quality time, how about that in the Bible? How about some quality time? We see Christ's example when he brought his disciples, said, stay here, I need to go talk to my Father. On a personal basis. We saw when Christ was with the multitudes, and yet he took his disciples and gave them quality time. So you see those throughout the Bible, how God's a quality time person. You know, we get quality time, personal time with our Father in heaven. We come before on our knees. Quality time. Here he was as our wave chief. Quality time. What did he do? He ascends to his Father to be glorified before his Father. Very quality time moment for him. I truly believe that we're going to have our quality time moment with our Father in heaven. It's not going to be some kind of group crown time. Yeah, passing all the crowns. Here, we got the angels passing out the boxes, just passing down the row. I doubt it. Now, what we can't figure out is the time in all this. How do you take, if there's 144,000, it's just like, you know, you're standing there, you know, kind of going, you know, this was taking a little bit more time than I thought. We'll be busy. Whatever it is, we're going to get our quality time. Of course, we've got eternity. So, again, how this is going to be manifested, but God is a quality time person, and he wants us to spend quality time with him. We also have children that need quality time, some attention, and spouses. And sometimes maybe even friends. Do you know you need some, you want to go out and talk? Maybe the person just doesn't feel like bearing their burden on you, and you're laying it out for them to be able to do that and give that sacrifice. Quality time. Okay, let's look at receiving gifts. I feel especially loved by someone who brings me gifts and other tangible expressions of love. Receiving gifts. Now, God's going to pour out. He has poured out blessings upon us that it says we can't even receive them. We can't even bear them. That's a promise to Malachi. I'll pour a blessing upon you. He promised that to the Israelites of old. You follow my commandments. We call them the blessings and cursings chapters. We've looked at them of old. And of course, the best gift that we could ever have is the gift of that God gave to us of his Son, Jesus Christ. That was a gift. The gift of eternal life. The gift of all the little things that, if you remember, I went through Revelation and spoke of those things that we don't know exactly the fulfillment. We receive a new name. You know, all those different things he says, I'm going to give to you. We're going to inherit the entire universe. So the gifts we're going to be given are incredible. So you see that identified within the Bible. Healing, is that not a gift? God's given us the gift of healing too, hasn't he? And it was given. And it's very personal too, isn't it? When you get a gift in such a way that there was actually a physical touch moment that we'll get to in a minute. Let's go to the next one. 4, I feel especially loved when someone pitches in to help me, perhaps by running errands or taking on my household chores. Here's your acts of service. We seem to have grown up in an era where people did a lot of this. You worked. You know, for those that came through the days of World War II, when the women would go to work when their men were at war. Constant work, constant service and serving. And I've known those widows that just say they were so frustrated because of their inability to do anything anymore. Even picking up a broom and sweeping. Their frustration was they couldn't do any more acts of service. It's very difficult. But in some occasions, what has to happen is the world keeps spinning and turning. And many people that have done acts of service for a long time now may find themselves in positions of receiving acts of service. And so for them, that may be a difficult time, but it has to be done. And the mentality has to be such in that someone is willing to receive that with the knowledge that I can't do anything anymore, but you know something? Thank you. Thank you for taking me to church. Thank you for getting me a chair. You know, thank you for watching out for those people that might be at the feast or somewhere else that may need a hymnal or may need to be served in such another way. And they'll go, well, you didn't have to do that. Well, of course, we don't have to do that. But I wanted to do it because I love you. That's a true statement. See, talk about acts of service. Jesus healed. What was it? What was his, besides that ultimate expression of service and laying down his life, remember the element? What he did before to show his service? Happy are you if you understand this. When he did the act of, really an extreme act of service, when you've got your creator of all things, your Lord and Master, the one from the very beginning who was with God, created all things, is washing your feet? That's amazing. That's huge to see that example. You think there's not acts of service and love? So he showed that expression that they were to have, then the ultimate, obviously, in laying down his life. Now we get to 5, the physical touch. Think physical touch is not important to God? You can't necessarily touch him now, can we? But what about all those scriptures that talk about cleaving and clinging to the truth? Not just loving. But actually, like we're bind. Remember what he said with the in the Old Testament? He said, bind them as frontlets between your eyes. There was something he wanted to even us to look at physically with this as far as that binding process that we love him so much that there is a clinging that takes place here. We see the example of John laying his head on Jesus' chest. That physical moment that was there. We see the laying on of hands. We see Christ touching and picking up the little children and blessing them. Physical touch is important to God too. I wonder if God is a God of hugs. My guess would be probably. So there's a lot of aspects about this and taking a look at what this is all about. So you can rate those for yourself where you fit within there. And then maybe if you've got kids or grandkids, figure out what theirs is. And watch. Watch as you'll watch the tank fill up. Is when I saw the difference between someone who I thought maybe was acts of service and was quality time. If I want the day to go well, do some quality time. I'm going to have a good day because the tank gets filled up. And I'm not talking about in an insincere way. I'm talking about sincerely sitting down or whatever it is that you know is on the receiving mode of a person that will get practice. Deuteronomy 6, a couple of scriptures before we close here. Deuteronomy 6, let's go back here. Because we see God's love for us in so many different ways. Manifested in physical ways and spiritual ways. He said in Deuteronomy 6, 5, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might." You know, it just didn't stop at love the Lord your God. Did it? There was something more to it that we're trying to strive to figure out the depth of what he's talking about. So it's not just words. This world is great with words, is great with "I love you." Then you get dysfunctional TV programs, Desperate Housewives, or whatever it was that's supposed to show you what love is all about. It shows you exactly what it's not all about. Everything that we watch is something, it's all selfishness and self-centeredness and taking and taking. We've got to practice the other element, the give side. He said, "The Lord did not set his love upon you, nor choose you because you were more in number than any people, because you were the fewest. Know therefore that the Lord, he is your God, the faithful God, who keeps his covenant and mercy with those that love him and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations." The merciful God. So we need to have our time, our quality time, our clinging, our acts of service, and even receiving gifts, which we deal with all the things that God has given to us, and our thank yous to God. That's a huge part of this. This nation has become a thankless nation and has rejected God. We practice the opposite, don't we? Thank you, God, for your blessings, for all that you do. So, yes, we have been practicing. We need to bear up a notch because the world is going the other way. So John 13, verse 34. All through, he's speaking of love in John 14, John 15. Here in John 13, verse 34, it says, "A new commandment I give to you." The way that you're looking at this now with a different type of heart, because these weren't really new. John 13, verse 34 and 35, it says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you." And he expressed his love to them in all these different ways. He says, "By this will all know that you are my disciples, if you have this love for each other." And ultimately, the love expressed in Revelation 12, verse 11, speaking of those that, such as us, they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives to the death. We can't get to that element without practice. It's got to be there. I'd like to end here with a song written by Clint Black. Some of you may know him. Very special words when it comes to the topic today. He said, "I remember well the day we wed. I can see that picture in my head. I still believe the words we said forever will ring true. Love is certain. Love is kind. Love is yours and love is mine. But it isn't something that we find. It's something that we do. It's holding tight, letting go. It's flying high and laying low. Let your strongest feeling show and your weakest too. It's a little and a lot to ask, an endless and a welcome task. Love isn't something that we have, it's something that we do. We help to make each other all that we can be, that we can find our strength and inspiration independently. The way we work together is what sets our love apart, so closely that you can't tell where I end and where you start. It gives me heart remembering how we started with a simple vow. There's so much to look back on now. Still, it feels brand new. We're on a road that has no end, and each day we begin again. Love's just not something that we're in. It's something that we do." There's no request too big or small. We give ourselves, we give our all. Love isn't someplace that we fall. It's something that we do. Interesting inspiration from a country music writer. But of all the songs that are written about love, Crazy Little Thing Called Love, as some would call it, when you see all the words to these different love songs, how many people get it? How many people should get it? You and I. And it gets better with practice.